Halashing for Halas? Want to bribe or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm very excited, but I'm rather nervous, Sharon Lurie, because I'm off to do a demonstration in London next week. Now, I'm excited, I'm nervous, but with my feet still firmly on the ground for another week, I've been practicing my demo with my grandchildren. And basically, anybody that walks past my kitchen only to see me talking to myself. So it's one thing, you know, to talk on the radio. And somehow I find it a lot easier because I can be talking to one or two people. I can be talking to 100. I don't know. But I can't see if you're yawning or if you're talking to somebody else or if the phone rings and you answer it and you leave the show for half an hour. I can't see you switching off the radio when you're bored as well. But at a live demo, all this is happening in front of me. And let's say, for argument's sake, Rose Levy's hearing aid is off and her daughter's shouting at her to switch it on. I'm the one that's going to be the whisperer. She's going to be shouting at me, talk up, talk up. But anyway, I must tell you, what I did was I thought, no, okay, it's quite, how bad can it be? I mean, you've done a demo before, but this is a different country. I've got to prepare, send notes of all the different ingredients I'll need, all the different utensils. I mean, this is like taking on this huge project. You know, I can walk into my own husband's butchery and I can get the meat that I want and I can see, no, this is good, that isn't, pop in, yes, you're cooking this right, no, you're cooking this wrong. You know, but for me to go into somebody else's place and start doing it my way could be a bit difficult. So anyway, I decided I am going to Google and search, how long does it take for people to get shifty in their seats at a cooking demonstration? You won't believe what came back to me. The first thing was, remember that a cooking demonstration doesn't just finish when you have packed up. It's spoken about long after you've packed up. And then, God forbid, something goes wrong. When they try and do what you made in front of them, it's like, oy vey, and then suddenly your number's on speed dial. Also, they said number two was, keep your audience entertained. Keep them interested. Have them sitting there with bated breath on the edge of their seats. Well, how do I do that? I'm not a comedian, but anyway, I can only try. Then, of course, you have to ensure you have a cut-off date for the attendees. You've got to know at least a week before how many people are coming. You've got to know how many people you can fit in the hall. You've got to give a cut-off date. You've got to try and tell. But, I mean, I don't know. You can't tell a Jewish person that there's a cut-off date. I mean, I think that's the reason why the chief rabbi has his challah bake as an open event. Imagine the phone calls. If he closed this event, imagine the phone calls he would have to deal with. You know, rabbi, I was the one who searched to get those special shoes that your baba needed for your wedding. And now you're not letting me come into the challah bake. You see, you can't. You just can't say that. We are not a very accepting community or nation, should I say. So it's very important, as I say, that you know how many people are coming. I mean, the meat guy, Steve Silverman, I mean, he has Silverman's, I think is the butchery's name. I have to give him a shout out because he's donated all the meat. And this poor guy doesn't know how much to make. Does he make a kilo of biltong? Does he make 3 kilos of biltong? And we it's just, you know, it's a hell of a thing. So, you'll have Mrs. Cohen who'll come up to the front door and say, no, my daughter's at this demonstration. Who says I can't buy a ticket at the door on the night? If this is for charity, you must let everybody in. So, it's a hard one, but I'm sure the English have got it all sorted out. So, in honor of the UK, I am going to share a lovely English recipe with you. Roast beef and Yorkshire pudding, followed by summer pudding, which is a really deliciously simple pudding to make after the break.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good morning, Adele Martins, and welcome to the Essen Fressen show on Hi FM. Thank you for joining us. And we're going to talk about your new book, My Vegetarian Bra. Now, I have to tell you, Adele, that recently, last week, I was quoted in a magazine as being the queen, the Highlands North queen of braing, okay? So I really, really, I love my braing. But of course, you know, being the butcher's wife, it's meat that I really braai. I mean, I've never really wrapped my heart and my hands around making beautiful vegetarian braais. And as you say in this book, it's not about, pushing carnivores down. It's just,
not at all.
So tell us what your book is all about.
Okay. Well, it is my first book.
Oh, yes.
And like I say, it's not my purpose or my intention to convert any carnivores. We are a braai nation. We love our braais. On Wednesdays, we already start inviting everyone for the weekend braai. That is what we're all about in South Africa. And, we love our fires. We love our braai. We braai in winter, in summer, whenever. Come hell or high water, we love to braai. And with this book, I mean, veganism and vegetarianism is the fastest growing trends in the world. So chances are that even though you are the best braai in South Africa, Sharon.
No, only Highlands North. Only Highlands North. My little area.
But one of these days, you will definitely have someone coming to your braai that will be a vegetarian or a vegan. This book is just basically giving new, innovative, fresh ideas to enhance your braai. That's all it is.
Right. Now, your passion for food, where does that come from? Have you done a course, you know, or did you do it? Have you been to culinary school, or are you one of those wonderful self-taught cooks?
I am a self-taught cook.
Yes.
And my culinary adventures actually started very, very late. I traveled quite a bit, and I basically started doing courses in every country that I visited. And that was in my early 30s.
Yes. Oh, you don't look older than 30 now.
So thank you very much. So I would visit every country, and every country that I went to, I would do a culinary course in. And for me, that was so amazing that I would just fall in love in every country with their food. And if you knew the basics of every country's food, then you can research any recipe and you can basically cook that country's food.
Right.
Yeah.
So which country would you say is one of your favorite? Because it seems as though this book is around Mediterranean food.
Yes.
And so
absolutely. I love Spain, and I really, really enjoyed Morocco.
Uh-huh. So what was so special about the Moroccan food?
The amount of spices they use for me was really amazing, and it was actually quite interesting. You know, sometimes people actually did a dinner for people once with the tagines and things, and they said to me, I can't believe the amount of spices that you put in. You know, sometimes I never use like measuring spoons and things. I would just measure with the eye. I would just throw
little
a whole lot of
this.
Spices.
That's
something that I picked up in Morocco.
Yes.
And, you know, so it's difficult. You can't do that with baking, obviously, but, with the tagines, they're very heavy handed with the spicing. And I love that. I love that with the Moroccan food.
Okay. So for our listeners, won't you explain what a tagine is?
Tagine is it's like a triangular pot, a pottery pot that you would use. It's similar to a poiki, but it's a traditional cooking pot in Morocco. So you would put all your food at the bottom with a little bit of liquid, and you would put it on the braai, on the fire, on a very low heat, and it would basically cook your food through steam.
Okay, is this the one that has the sort of vertical cone-looking top to
yes,
it?
Yes, that's it. Uh-huh. That's the one.
Okay. So you could, that's, and you can actually put that on the braai?
Yes, you can put that on the braai.
And just let it cook.
And there's actually one in the book, where we made a 7-vegetable tagine.
Oh, delicious. You see, now, this is what I need. I need, because I love braaiing so much, it's all very well, like having one salad and then my chops and boerewors and steak, whatever it is, and my ribs. I need to also be able to create on the braai, put some eggplant and grow eggplant on the braai. So what?
Gone are the days of the full butternut and the, you know, the potatoes in foil.
Yes, absolutely. So what, how do you just sort of prick your eggplant and just stick it on the braai? How long would it take to cook an eggplant?
The tagine.
No, the eggplant, yeah, like on the braai, if I really want to make, let's say I want to make baba ganoush, and I think there's nothing finer.
If you're roasting it, it's going to take you about 30 minutes. It depends on the size, obviously, of the eggplant.
Sure.
If you're using the smaller eggplant, it's going to take you about 18 to 20 minutes to roast it. And then, obviously, you're going to take it from there. But, yeah, the bigger one is going to take up to 40 minutes.
Right. And would I just put that straight on the braai, sort of
a little bit straight on the braai, on the grill. You can even put it onto the coals.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Could I wrap it up in tin foil and stick it underneath?
No, you don't have to put it in foil even.
Okay. Because I'm just trying to work out now, you know, the timing. So I put on, when do I put on my potatoes? When do I put on,
We've put the timing on in the recipe. So everything is actually listed with every single recipe.
Oh, fantastic. And now, let's say we're making, baba ganoush on the braai.
Yes.
Are we going to an ad break or no? I can carry on. Great. Okay, so we want to make it on the braai because for me there is nothing finer. Do you have a recipe for that? One with lots of garlic.
The baba ganoush?
The baba ganoush recipe. Would you like to share that?
Yes, there's a classic baba ganoush recipe in the book.
Right.
We're going to use, you would use 2 medium brinjals.
Yes.
Some garlic cloves. Tahini, cumin, lemon, sea salt. Black pepper and your olive oil.
So I would
for drizzling afterwards.
Uh huh.
So you're gonna start off your coals are gonna be quite hot.
Yes.
You would pierce your brinjals.
Right.
With a fork. Mm-hmm. Put those on the braai grid, turning them quite often. Once they are done, you would remove them. And then place them on a wooden board. You can cut them open. What you would do is you take out the seeds.
Yes.
You could cut them open, take out the seeds, scrape out the inside, put that on your puree onto a beautiful plate. And then you can even put on lovely little, you know, these lovely flowers that are in season right now.
Yes.
Salt blommetjies is what we call them on the West Coast.
Okay.
And then you can do... sprinkle over some lovely seed mix and drizzle with your olive oil.
Well, that just sounds too wonderful. Now, if I'm, let's say we're going to do a braai for breakfast. Because often we're in the game reserve and it's breakfast time and it's obviously scuttle braai time and whatever. What would you do if you were going to the game reserve and you wanted to make a lovely breakfast for...
You know, I love playing around with mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
They are so versatile. And, you know, they also always take on the flavor of your marinade.
Right.
So if you take your normal blikbeker, like we call them... You cut your mushrooms up, or your mushrooms that you left over from the night before.
Yes.
Cut those up. You put them in those little cups, and you make your smoor, you know, like tomato and onion mix.
Yes, yes.
Put that in there. Little bit of cheese on top. You put those on the coals, and you let that cook off for a little while all together, and you take it off, and then you cut up some mint or coriander on top of that. Delicious.
And then throw in an egg. We can almost make a shake.
There you go. That's for the vegetarians, not the vegans.
And when we come back, I'd love to chat to you about some of your campfire experiences and what made you fall in love with brying and cooking that way.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen show. I am talking to Adele Martins, and we are chatting about our favorite way of cooking, brying, as you all know. And it's a lovely combination, the two of us, me, the meat brier, and Adele. Her book is actually called My Vegetarian Bra. And we can work well together. We can,
I would love to come and have a bra with you.
So tell us about your wonderful experiences. What actually made braing so special and so beautiful for you?
You know, Sharon, what I always found amazing on my travels is I would walk in the markets, and everywhere I go, the most amazing thing for me was the smell of the smoke.
Oh,
and that would always make me miss home the most. And I would always think back of Sundays at home, or Saturdays, or even the Friday evening braai already. And that is, I think, the most, was also the inspiration for the book.
Right.
Was that feeling, that feeling I had or felt inside was always, okay, I've been in this country for so long, and I've been eating all this amazing food, and it's been such an amazing experience. But as soon as I felt or smelled that something brying on an open fire, my heart just melted, and I just remembered that feeling of home and the South African braai. Yes. And for me, that was it's always been the most amazing thing. And I always wanted to just come back home and have a lovely braai.
Well, you see, this is where you and I differ, because the smell of fat burning on coals from meat, nothing better. But as I say, I do have to admit that, you know, nice eggplant baba ganoush is lovely. And so, you know, there's a lovely part in the book that I just have to read, where you say that you sat around the campfire, first the coffee early in the morning, and you were just taken back to these beautiful weekends in the bush, where after dinner, huge tree trunks were dragged into the fire, and we would sit around the campfire staring at it without a word or looking at the stars, well into the night. Bushveld TV. I mean, that really sums it up for us. I mean, we are a nation, as you say, of briars, people who love fires, and, you know, with your baked beans bubbling in a small pot and fried eggs and your krummelpap with a tomato and onion relish. This sums up our beautiful South Africa.
That's what we're about.
Absolutely. So let's share a couple more recipes. What other exciting recipes do you have for us?
There's a beautiful polenta tart, which it's absolutely amazing. And when you look at it, the picture, it's really, really stunning. And we call it pop and sauce in the book. It's really a new addition to pop and sauce. And then there's also a lovely sweet cheese mushroom pie that's made on the fire.
Won't you share the polenta with us? Because I know there are so many people that are allergic to so many different things, and polenta is a maize meal. So will you do you have that recipe with you?
It's basically a polenta base at the bottom.
Right.
With a whole lot of roasted vegetables on top that you roast on the fire. It includes roasted tomatoes, courgettes, lovely goat cheese. You can add some mushrooms. There's black olives cut in half. And there's some red onions, and then lovely basil. And then the base between it is basically basil pesto.
Ah, right.
And then it looks beautiful, but it is so, so delicious. And you can eat it hot or cold.
Right.
It's stunning for a summer or a winter braai. It's lovely, yes, with a glass of white wine or bubbly.
Right. And, you know, I was actually thinking to myself, okay, so now how could she make something look a little meaty? And then guess what I came up and saw? Moroccan-style chickpea keftas, which it looks absolutely, yes, amazing. Now, we have to share that recipe with lemon and mint, yes, right, and a mini flatbreads. I mean, this looks fantastic. Because then, you know, if a person goes to a braai and they're feeling a little bit awkward because maybe they're vegetarian and everybody else is eating these wonderful, yes, steaks slathered in garlic. And then at least their kebabs can look like meat. So will you share that recipe with us?
Yes. It's basically you take your skewers.
Yes.
You drain and rinse your chickpeas,
right,
your canned black beans, some breadcrumbs, your diced onions, which gives a stunning flavor, for some garlic, which you just mentioned.
Right.
There's some cumin in there, mint here. This is all your Moroccan spices, which I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Coriander, fresh coriander, mint, rosemary, smoked paprika, which gives it a lovely extra smoky flavor, black pepper and salt. You mix all of that together, and then you stick that onto your skewers.
Right.
You braai that on the fire.
Okay.
You make your lighter.
Just remembering that we've got our breadcrumbs holding it all together. Now, for those,
yes,
people who eat eggs, would you include that just to sort of?
You can. You can add an egg.
Tightly,
yes,
packed.
But when you mince, yes, all of this in your liquidizer or in your NutriBullet,
yes,
you know, because your black beans and your chickpeas,
yes,
once you've drained it, it is quite soft.
Okay.
So
right,
you don't really have to add an egg, but
okay,
if it is, you can.
Right.
If you would like to add an egg, you can.
Okay, no problem.
So you put that onto the fire. You can then braai that for a couple of minutes. They cook quite quickly.
Yes, because they're all canned already. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So you're basically just browning them.
Right.
Okay, and then you take your mini flatbreads. You put those on the fire to char them up a bit. Your raita, which is basically like a cucumber dip.
Yes.
Includes your cucumber, some Bulgarian yogurt,
right,
chopped mint, and some lemon zest. So
right,
very refreshing, very, very refreshing. So you would open up your raita, you would cut it in half.
Yes.
You would take your kefta, which is your little, call it a sousati.
Right.
You would put it into your pita, and then you would take some of your cucumber dip, which is your raita, and you would put that onto your kefta. And you're ready to go.
Beautiful. And that's all we, and in fact, I was going to say to you, can we just use pita instead of a flatbread? But pita is a flatbread.
Sure.
So
absolutely,
that's perfect. Now, I did see, your braai butternut. I mean, I know that everybody says, braai butternut, so has been and so yesterday. But there is nothing more delicious. And I see that you do it. A braai butternut and miso parcel. And in the book, all I wanted to eat was butternut last night after seeing this. So,
yes.
Tell me if I'm right in, with this recipe. Just to take two large butternuts, not too large because you wanted to rather have the longer neck, not too many,
yes,
pips, four cloves of garlic, minced, 2 tablespoons of red miso paste, 2 tablespoons of honey. Now, is there anything we can use instead of miso paste?
No, the miso paste is giving it that little bit of a sour and salty flavor.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't really go with anything else. That is what's giving it magic.
Okay, so we would need the miso paste, 2 tablespoons of honey, 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil, 2 tablespoons sesame oil, 1 teaspoon dried chili flakes, and you can put a little bit more on if you want to. It's there just to taste,
yes,
and toasted sesame seeds and fried coriander to garnish. I mean, it just looked so wonderful. So you halve and de-pip the butternuts, mix the garlic, miso, honey, oils, and chili flakes in a bowl and stir to combine. Place each butternut half on a piece of foil and brush liberally with the mixture. Wrap the butternuts with foil and place in the coals for 30 to 40 minutes or until cooked through and soft when pierced with a knife. Carefully remove from the coals, remove the butternut from the foil and serve garnished with sesame seeds and fresh coriander. Okay. Aren't you getting hungry hearing your own recipes? Okay, so that was just one that I had to share for those who actually do enjoy butternut, and you can cook it at the same time or start just before. I would start just before brying a steak or boerewors. I think, you know, you give it a bit of time.
A little bit of time.
Okay, so what is your favorite way of brying? Do you prefer gas? Do you prefer coals? Do you prefer wood? What's your favorite?
I love wood. Yeah. We here in the West Coast, we use Rooikrans.
Yes, that's just wonderful.
I love Rooikrans.
Yes.
I also prefer to eat, tapas style, meze, small plates. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. I love that kind of meals. Where everyone can have small little plates of a whole lot of different kinds of food.
That's your influence from Spain, all the tapas, I suppose.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I know that you've written a lovely book called My Vegetarian Bra, but are you really a vegetarian?
I'm a bit of a flexitarian, I would say.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah, I don't mind if people eat meat, and I also don't mind preparing it. Right. And I also don't mind if people share my brides. Not a problem at all.
Good. Okay, so just coming to an end, I mean, you've got such wonderful recipes. I mean, sweet potato falafel pita with chimichurri sauce. I mean, that is just my scene.
Those are delicious.
Yeah, and you've just got, and your basmati, the rice, I mean, I think it was a wild rice that you had, which was beautiful.
Is it the jeweled rice?
Yes, that looked beautiful with the pistachio nuts. Delicious. That looks wonderful.
Yes, I included a couple of winter recipes. I would say those are one of them, for the winter brides. And Persian jeweled rice with the roasted butternut.
And such a simple one that I made this weekend. I made it last night because I love, coming from Durban, I love bried corn. So what I did was I did your corn on the cob with the cherry tomatoes, and I bribed the...
Oh, lovely.
I bribed the... Oh, it was absolutely delicious. I added the red onion, the avocados, the tin of chickpeas, and it just all the beautiful fresh parsley and herbs that went into it with the virgin olive oil and the mint. It was absolutely delicious. I must say, I ate it on a bagel. So there you are. I was vegetarian for the night. Anyway, I'd love you to share a recipe for something like, you know, we end a brine, somehow we always think, okay, so we'll have a bit of fresh fruit or something. What lovely brine recipes can you suggest for fruit?
For
fruit, like would you do grilled pineapple with cinnamon and sugar, or what kind of fruity kind of desserts would you bri? I know you do the bried stone fruit with the coconut cream and tahina. I mean, that sounds delicious. Can you give us that recipe? I've seen a couple of peaches.
There's some delicious recipes in here.
Yes.
A personal favorite of mine is the vegan bried pineapple and banana soft serve.
Ah, right. So how would we do that? Tell us, share. Not in front of you. Well, I must tell you, while you're looking for that recipe, the bright stone fruit with the coconut cream and tahina, that is 100 mils of coconut cream. And remember, it's coconut cream chilled for at least 8 hours. And you'll need 1 tablespoon of caster sugar, 3 tablespoons of tahina, 8 stoned fruit in season, like plums, apricots, halved with the stones removed. 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil, fresh mint to garnish. And you whip the coconut cream. So in other words, carefully you take the coconut cream off the top of your coconut that's been in the fridge for a while. And don't let any of the watery bit at the bottom come in, otherwise your cream won't beat up. And then you beat it until it's creamy and slightly thick, and you add the caster sugar and beat for a few more seconds, and then you stir in the tahina, and you stick it in the fridge until you need it. And you brush all the beautiful fruit with olive oil, place it on the braai, and braai over medium hot coals for about 4 minutes on each side, and it looks absolutely delicious. And you place it on a serving platter, sprinkle with the mint leaves, and serve with the coconut cream. How easy is that? Isn't that wonderful?
Easy.
Right. Have you got the recipe for your favorite pudding?
Yes, I do.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so it's basically 500 grams of fresh pineapples peeled, cored, and sliced.
Right.
Extra virgin olive oil for brushing.
Right.
4 medium bananas, also sliced in large chunks. 1 can of coconut milk, chilled overnight. 1 tablespoon of lemon juice and 1 tablespoon of sea salt flakes.
Uh-huh.
So you would brush your pineapples slightly with the olive oil, and you would place those on the braai.
Mm-hmm.
So what we basically try to do is, with this book, we try to bring in a braai element in every single recipe.
Yes.
So that's why these pineapples went onto the braai with this.
Okay, and the bananas, do you braai the bananas as well?
No, not the bananas.
Uh-huh.
Only the pineapples.
Okay.
Okay, so the bananas, the pineapples, then we place those in a container,
mm-hmm,
and freeze them with the banana pieces.
Right.
Okay, so those came out. We place the bananas and the pineapples in the coconut milk, lemon juice, and the sea salt in the food processor, and you blitz those until they're creamy.
Uh-huh.
So you remember the coconut milk was frozen overnight.
Yes.
So you place it in a suitable container and you freeze for a few hours until frozen,
mm-hmm,
but still easy to spoon. And that's it. It's the easiest ice cream you can make.
Right.
4 single steps. That's it. Bob's your uncle.
Sure. Easy as that. What was that? The coconut cream, pineapple that has been braaied, which is really delicious. I mean, when you bring out that beautiful caramelization. That brings out the sweetness. Then you've got the peeled banana, which has been frozen.
That's it.
Right.
A little bit of lemon juice.
Lemon juice and?
A little bit of sea salt flakes, one teaspoon.
Right. Blend
it. And the coconut milk.
So the banana is already frozen, so you blend it all together, and then do we put it back in the freezer until we're ready to eat it? Adele, it has been wonderful speaking to you, and I'm so pleased that we could combine all these wonderful vegetarian recipes with what's going to be on the rest of the braai. That is the meat. And
thank you for trying at least one of my recipes so far.
I
hope you will definitely try some of the others with all your other ribs and fillets and steaks and
absolutely
pork bellies and things.
I will give you a show, a little representation. I'm not telling you how big you will be represented on my plate, but you'll be represented.
That would be lovely.
Okay, thank you for joining us. Lovely chatting.
Thank you so much, Sharon.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Well, welcome back to the Essen Fresen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Coach of Butcher's Wife, and I'm coming to you live in studio, and that song is one of my all-time favorites. You see, I'm giving my age away. That was Track of the Cat by Dionne Warwick. But I thought, you know what? Everybody who knows how I love Leopard. And so this big cat is moving on down to London for 2 weeks to do 2 demonstrations. and to the communities there, the Radit community, and I'm also doing my second demonstration at the Emmanuel School. So I'm very excited, but as I said, very nervous. So I thought, you know what? We've been talking about braai, about South African foods and things like that. So in honor, I decided in honor of my visit to the UK, I'm going to share a lovely English recipe with you. And this is roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. So, for those who haven't got my first book, those that have got it, you'll find this recipe on page 48. But I just had to share it to get me into the English mode, English swing of things. So I do this with a shoulder bolo. Now, shoulder bolo, we use shoulder bolo for our rare roast in the butchery, in the deli. And shoulder bolo is a very lean, boneless, solid piece of meat and is used in most delis, as I said, as their rare roast beef cut. And because it is very thinly sliced, they can get away with dry roasting it rather than having to braise or stew it. So we're going to follow suit. And although most of us don't have those wonderful automatic meat slicers, there is nothing a little more concentration won't help with. And by using a sharp carving knife that we can also use on Shabbos. And just remember, with this cut of meat, you've got to keep it thin. Got to keep it thin, each slice thin. So sharpen up those knives before Shabbos, if you're going to make this for Shabbos, and get ready to slice into this wonderful cut, the shoulder roast. You will need 1 heaped tablespoon of prepared whole grain mustard, available at most supermarkets and most butcheries. You'll also need 1/2 teaspoon of dried tarragon, 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme, 1 level teaspoon of paprika, 1/2 teaspoon garlic salt, 1 tablespoon brown sugar, 3 tablespoons oil, 2 teaspoons of crushed peppercorns. You can use a tri-colored if you want. It's nice to have a little red glint every now and then on your roast. And you would need about a 2 by 2.5 kilo shoulder bolo. You'll also need a little oil for roasting, and of course my favorite, 2 large onions sliced into rings. Now, the other day somebody actually said to me, she said, "Sharon, how come you'd think that you would use a lot of fresh herbs?" Yes, I do use a lot of fresh herbs, but I try to limit that because to check them is a bit of a nightmare. And some of them you can't check, and some of them you have to use dried anyway. But if you want to spend that little extra and get it checked for you, which is what I like to do, then just go into Fresh Fellers and you can get beautiful fresh herbs. And I would say it's about 3 tablespoons fresh herbs to about a teaspoon of dried herbs. So what we have to do, and it's very, very important, is that you've got to preheat your oven. Don't start preparing everything and, putting all the spices and everything on and then go, "Oh, I forgot to put..." The oven has to be hot. So we start off by setting our oven to 220, and then we combine the mustard, the tarragon, the thyme, paprika, garlic salt, sugar is so important in this. It just caramelizes it and gives it that wonderful dark sort of color to the beautiful roast that we're using. You'll also need oil and peppercorns. Okay, so with the palm of your hand, you cover the entire roast evenly with this mixture. Pour a little oil into a roasting pan and add 1/2 the onion rings. Place the bolo on top of the onions and cover the top of the roast with the rest of the onions. You roast it in the oven covered for 40 minutes. Then you reduce the heat to 180 and you continue cooking uncovered for 15 minutes. Turn the meat over and roast uncovered for a further 15 minutes. So it's a lovely brown roast. You remove the roast from the oven at this point. And it may not be ready yet. In fact, it won't be ready yet, unless you like it really rare. And it will still need a little, it may need about another 30 minutes, but it depends. The way I like to do it is I just put a knife through the middle and I just sort of open it a little to see how we're doing with the meat. And then you'll see how long you actually have to put it in for, or you can just stick it in your warming oven just before Shabbos to warm it through. But to coordinate it with the Yorkshire pudding, which is sometimes difficult to do, and over the years I have found that it's just far easier, especially if we're cooking on Shabbos. I make the Yorkshire pudding early in the day, and then I just stick it into the warming oven, and somehow that puffiness and those Yorkshire puddings still stay gorgeous and puffy. So while I'm talking about Yorkshire pudding, let me give the ingredients for that. It's 4 large eggs. Now, I know you're all going to say, oh, but everybody uses milk in their Yorkshire pudding. And when you watch these English programs, they always say, you've got to put milk, you've got to put milk. That's what it's all about. Believe me, my mother made this for 60 years, 70 years, without putting any water in. And she just used 4 large eggs, 2 cups of water, and 1.5 cups of self-raising flour, sifted, of course, with 1 teaspoon of salt. And she used to stick it into her liquidizer, her food processor, whatever she wanted, and she would just beat it until it all combined for about 3 or 4 minutes, and cook it, as I said, in a very high oven as well. So this Yorkshire pudding can either be made in a muffin tin, and served as individual puddings, or in a large, shallow roasting pan. So you place a tablespoon of oil into each muffin cup, or if using a roasting pan, enough oil just to line the bottom, about a centimeter. You blend the eggs and the water and everything in the food processor or in a liquidizer, as my mother does, and you add the flour and the salt, and you stick it in the fridge, and you leave that for about 2 hours. And then you place the oiled muffin or roasting pan, here's the secret, into the oven on really, really high, on the highest that you can go, about 250. Be very careful. You've got to use oven gloves to take the tray out and to take the, or the muffin tray, whatever it is. And you've got to make sure that your batter is in a jug. And as it comes out, while it's really hot, you pour it in to the Yorkshire pudding, the muffin tin or the tin that you're going to be baking in, and you turn it down to 220 and you just let it roast, and you'll be amazed. It, like in a couple of minutes, it just starts to rise and it goes really high. And then take them out of the oven. It's normally 25 minutes in the oven. They go crispy and brown, and then you switch off the oven, leave it there for about 5 minutes to dry out, almost like choux pastry. Leave it to dry out, and boy, have you got beautiful Yorkshire pudding. So there's your roast beef. Now, if you want to, you could use scotch fillet. I just like the idea of a shoulder bowler because you cut it really thin, and it's lovely to have thin rare roast with your Yorkshire pudding. And don't forget to make gravy, because there's nothing nicer than beautiful roast beef, Yorkshire pudding, and gravy. So I'm sure you all know how to make gravy. You leave whatever you have from the meat. You add a couple of tablespoons of pisto, cold water, mix it all together, bring it to the boil, and you have beautiful, beautiful dark gravy, dark brown gravy. Okay, now I need to hurry. They are telling me I need to end it all. So I just want to say thank you. I'll see you when I get back from London. Okay, so there we have a little taste of Africa, a little taste of London, and I'll see you when I get back. And remember, it's the eaten meat that makes the show complete. But one very important thing before I go, please ensure that you not only place, but you take your meat orders early. I won't be here just before Rosh Hashanah, so I'm begging of you all, take your meat early for Rosh Hashanah. Don't worry. You can freeze meat for the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever it is. Nothing's going to happen to that meat. Have a wonderful Yontav, and I'll be back on air when I'm back.